Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring digital problem solving and decision making. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill. So, I mean, imagine you are just firing off 100 emails a day, clearing your Slack queue the absolute second a notification pops up, and, you know, feeling incredibly, undeniably productive.
Oh, yeah, we've all been there. It feels great in the moment.
Right. But then at the end of the week, you realize you just spent 40 hours optimizing a workflow that, well, shouldn't actually exist in the first place. That is the trap of the modern workplace. Today, we are setting a baseline to really understand how digital environments absolutely demand that you solve problems efficiently, analyze information critically, and make informed decisions using all these collaboration tools.
Yeah, it really is the ultimate illusion of modern work, you know, confusing motion with actual progress, because we have immediate access to literally every tool imaginable, and that creates incredibly high stakes for your immediate career impact.
I can imagine. It's got to be pretty risky.
It is. I mean, it is not an exaggeration to say that weak skills in digital problem solving will actively harm your trajectory. Mm-hmm. Like, when you lack these skills, you inevitably make poor decisions based on just, you know, surface level data.
It just compounds the issue, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That leads directly to inefficiency, missed opportunities, and honestly, highly ineffective teamwork. But when you flip that script, strong skills in this exact area become the primary drivers of your productivity. They foster leadership, spark real innovation, and they form the absolute bedrock of overall workplace effectiveness.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about navigating these modern digital environments without a strong foundation in problem solving, it sort of feels like driving a million-dollar sports car in a brand new city, but you don't have a map.
That is a really great way to put it.
Right. Because of the technology, you are moving incredibly fast. You've got the horsepower of AI, cloud computing, instant messaging. But without that foundational decision-making ability, you're probably just accelerating in the exact wrong direction.
Yeah, the sports car analogy is close. But I'd argue the reality of the digital workplace is actually far more insidious than simply not having a map.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, it's more like driving that sports car with a GPS that is actively feeding you the wrong directions because it's, you know, algorithmically optimized to drive you past billboards rather than actually taking you on the fastest route.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Right. Because the environment itself has a vested interest in your attention. So to actually navigate that city, we have to look past the basic dictionary definitions of problem solving and critical thinking. We really need to look at the mechanics of how they operate under that kind of pressure.
Let's do that because, you know, we hear terms like critical thinking and decision making thrown around. So often they sort of start to lose their meaning. They just become like bullet points on a resume.
Totally. They become buzzwords.
Exactly. But if we break down the mechanics, decision making isn't just picking an option from a list. It is fundamentally an act of elimination. Every single time you say yes to a specific digital workflow or like a new app, you are simultaneously saying no to three others. It's entirely about opportunity cost.
Yes, that is exactly the mechanism at play. And it forms a very tight continuous cycle with the other two core concepts, which are critical thinking and problem solving.
How do those three interact, practically speaking?
Well, in a digital space, you literally cannot make a high-quality decision if you haven't first used critical thinking to strip away the interface design, the push notifications, and the algorithmic bias to just look at the raw facts.
Getting past all the shiny stuff.
Right. Without critical thinking acting as a filter, your problem solving is just guessing. And without structured problem solving, your decision making is basically just reacting to whatever pinged you last.
Okay, I want to pause there and push back on something, or at least voice a frustration that I know so many people listening are dealing with right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
So in an age of absolute information overload, isn't there a massive risk of analysis paralysis? Like, if critical thinking means analyzing all the information objectively, how do you ever actually pull the trigger and make a decision?
That is the million-dollar question.
Because the digital world provides an endless, infinite stream of data. I mean, you could research a single workflow bottleneck until the end of time, always finding, you know, one more article, one more forum post, one more YouTube tutorial.
You've just diagnosed what is arguably the most common and destructive trap in the digital workplace today.
Really? The most destructive.
Oh, absolutely. Analysis paralysis is incredibly real, and it happens precisely because our brains were not evolved to process infinite data streams. When you have access to every data point ever recorded, it actually feels irresponsible to make a decision without reviewing all of it.
Yeah, you feel like you're missing out on the one secret trick that's going to fix everything.
Exactly. But that is where the transition from mere data gathering to strategic digital problem solving has to happen. We have to implement strategies that artificially limit the noise.
So, okay, what is the mechanism for limiting that noise? Like, how do we actually stop drowning in 30 open browser tabs and move forward with the solution?
The most effective method is a rigid four-step framework designed to protect your cognitive load. So step one is to define the problem clearly. And I don't just mean writing it down, I mean building a fence around it.
Fence. I like that visual.
Yeah, you have to establish strict boundaries regarding what you are trying to solve, and maybe more importantly, what you are not trying to solve. Then step two is gathering relevant information. And the operational word there is relevant.
So not just going down a rabbit hole.
Right. You are not looking for all the information on the internet. You are only looking for evidence that fits inside the fence you built in step one.
Which naturally leads to step three, which is evaluating multiple solutions. And this step really stands out to me. Why is looking at more than one answer so vital for people operating specifically in digital environments?
Because the digital world is completely engineered to give you an immediate answer, but it is rarely the optimal one for your specific context, like the first answer you find on a search engine or the first output generated by an AI. It's based on a generalized aggregate pattern.
It's just playing the odds, basically.
Exactly. It's the mathematical average of what worked for a million other people. Digital environments demand adaptable thinking. So if you just take that first automated guess, you aren't really solving the problem. You're just outsourcing your critical thinking to a server farm.
Yeah, you're letting the machine do the thinking for you.
Precisely. You have to force yourself to generate a plan B and a plan C and evaluate them against each other. And then finally, step four is reflecting on the outcomes to continuously improve.
I really like looking at it that way. It highlights the difference between, say, taking a math test and conducting a science experiment.
Oh, I love that comparison. Say more about that.
Well, on a math test, there is one singular objective right answer. You know, 2 + 2 = 4, and you put down your pencil. But navigating digital workflows is a science experiment. There isn't one magical, perfect answer hiding behind the right Google search.
No, there definitely isn't.
Instead, it's about finding the best hypothesis supported by the evidence you have, running the experiment, and then refining it based on the result.
A continuous process of refinement.
Exactly.
And to prove that this framework actually works in practice, we should really look at a concrete scenario. Let's shift away from the abstract theory and look at a real-world application involving a student project team.
Yes, the University Group Project, a truly universal experience of absolute chaos. Paint the picture for us. What were they dealing with?
Right, so we all know the scenario. You have four or five people trying to collaborate, and the digital footprint is an absolute disaster.
I'm getting stressed just thinking about it.
I know, right? They had three different Slack threads going simultaneously. A sprawling Google Doc where literally nobody knew which paragraph was the final version, and people texting each other urgent updates. Half the team was inevitably working on outdated data, and deadlines were slipping. They were moving fast, but their workflow efficiency was just terrible.
And the default reflex in that situation, and I have absolutely been guilty of this, it's to just throw more software at the problem. You sit there and say, well, clearly Slack and Google Docs aren't working. Let's download Asana, or let's mandate that everyone uses monday.com. You assume a new interface will fix a broken team.
Which is pretty much the worst possible move.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because throwing new software at a bad process just gives you a highly digitized, extremely expensive bad process. Right, it just amplifies the chaos.
Exactly. But this team didn't do that. They actually used the four-step framework. First, they paused and defined the actual problem, which was communication bottlenecks and version control. They didn't blame the software. They diagnosed the root cause of the friction.
They built the fence around the problem.
Exactly. They built the fence, then they gathered the evidence of where the breakdowns were happening, evaluated their options, and finally redesigned their digital collaboration processes.
So what did they actually change?
They instituted a really simple rule. All final version history lives in one specific Notion database, and Slack is strictly reserved for urgent real-time pings. That's it. They didn't necessarily buy new tools. They just completely restructured how they used the tools they already had to eliminate the bottleneck.
I mean, a university group project is a great microcosm, but I want to map this onto the corporate world because the scale changes, but the mechanics are identical, right?
Completely identical. I mean, the exact same bottlenecks happening in that student project are the ones plaguing global remote corporate teams right now.
Like losing files and miscommunication.
Yeah, someone missing a crucial update in a messy Microsoft Teams channel, or two remote developers accidentally overwriting each other's code because of really poor file sharing protocols. In a remote work environment, your ability to diagnose and redesign digital collaboration processes isn't just a nice supplementary skill, it is the core competency of your job.
And realizing that your choices affect an entire remote team brings up a much heavier implication, I think. None of these digital decisions happen in a vacuum.
No, they certainly don't.
Like, the way you choose to organize your data directly impacts the person in the next time zone who needs to access it. This brings us to the concept of responsible use, and specifically, the tension between objective analysis and bias.
Yeah, let's revisit the core of critical thinking for a second, which is analyzing information objectively and logically. In today's digital ecosystem, maintaining objectivity is incredibly difficult, and it is a profound ethical and professional responsibility.
Because everything is so customized for us now.
Right. We are operating in environments algorithmically designed to feed us what we want to hear. If you're researching a workflow solution, the search engine might prioritize an expensive, heavy enterprise tool simply because of ad spend, when a lightweight, free workaround would actually serve your team way better.
This reminds me of the human instincts that actively work against us here. Our brains are hardwired to jump to conclusions, especially when data is presented in a way that triggers anxiety.
Oh, absolutely. The fear factor is huge.
Like a dashboard shows a red arrow pointing down, and the immediate visceral instinct is to panic and completely overhaul the system. Algorithms know that we click on panic, so they actively surface the most extreme data points.
Which is exactly why maintaining objectivity isn't just a philosophical ideal. It is a mechanical necessity to protect your team.
Protect them from what, specifically?
From the fallout. If you let algorithmic bias or your own instinct to panic dictate your problem solving, you create massive ripple effects. If you blindly accept a flawed data visualization, or if you refuse to adapt to a more efficient collaboration tool because you're just comfortable with the old way, you actively create friction for everyone else.
But it's not just about you.
No, continuous improvement is framed as a fundamental responsibility to your colleagues because your digital footprint literally becomes their work environment.
So it's a structural responsibility. I want to ask you, the listener, a provocative question based on that. How often do you pause to interrogate the evidence behind a digital solution versus simply clicking accept default settings out of convenience?
That is a tough question to answer, honestly.
Right. When you set up a new tool, are you doing it in a way that makes sense for the whole team's cognitive load? Or are you just doing what's fastest for you in that 5-minute window?
Yeah, convenience is absolutely the enemy of critical thinking in digital spaces. It's the path of least resistance, but it usually leads to a dead end for the whole team.
So how do we systematically fight that convenience? Let's move from the theory into some highly practical growth advice. How do we actually build the habit of analyzing our workflows?
The most effective way to build this muscle is through immediate practical application. So the challenge for you right now is to identify one digital workflow problem in your own life today.
It could be anything, right?
Anything. It could be how you track your university assignments, how you manage your personal inbox, or even how you organize files for a side project.
Okay, so step one, define the problem and build the fence. Then what?
Then you apply the full framework. Analyze the root causes. Like, why is your inbox always overflowing? Propose multiple alternative solutions. Compare those alternatives objectively without just jumping at the first app you see an ad for. Then recommend an improvement to yourself and actually implement it.
And to execute that, we have a specific digital toolkit. We aren't just doing this in our heads. We are looking at tools like Miro, Trello, and Notion. And I think it's crucial to understand the mechanisms of these tools. They aren't just, you know, digital to-do lists.
Far from it. They are basically digital canvases designed to externalize your cognitive load.
Getting it out of your head.
Exactly. Let's take Trello, for example. It uses Kanban boards. It basically functions like a digital conveyor belt for your tasks. The mechanism of moving a card from a to-do column to a doing column forces you to visually confront your work-in-progress limits.
Right, so you can't ignore the backlog anymore.
Yeah. If you see 20 cards piled up in the doing column, you instantly see the bottleneck. It makes the invisible problem completely visible.
I love that. And Miro operates on a similar principle of visibility, but for spatial mapping. It's basically an infinite whiteboard where you can map out incredibly complex, abstract problems with digital sticky notes.
Yeah, it's great for visual thinkers.
You can draw lines between a symptom and a root cause, physically mapping the architecture of a problem before you ever try to actually solve it.
And then you have Notion, which operates as a highly customizable relational database. You can build structured tables to evaluate multiple alternatives side by side, linking documents, assigning weights to different criteria, and, you know, collaborating asynchronously with a team.
They are essentially playgrounds for critical thinking. They take the mental gymnastics of holding 50 variables in your head and put them on a screen where you can actually manipulate them.
Precisely. They take the invisible, exhausting work of digital problem solving and make it actionable.
As we start to wrap up this deep dive, looking at those tools really crystallizes why this entire topic is about preparing you for the future of work. There is a core reflection prompt we want to leave you with today. How can stronger problem-solving and decision-making skills improve your future career success?
It really is the ultimate question for anyone entering the workforce today. Technology will absolutely continue to evolve at a breakneck, totally unpredictable pace. The specific software you spend hours learning today might be entirely obsolete in 5 years.
Or replaced by something we haven't even thought of.
Right, replaced by an AI agent we haven't even conceptualized yet. But the underlying ability to diagnose a problem, objectively evaluate evidence, and implement a structured solution, that will never, ever lose its value.
And that leads me to a final thought I want to offer you to mull over. We spend an incredible amount of energy stressing over learning the right software or mastering the exact mechanics of the newest productivity app. But perhaps the most valuable future workplace skill isn't knowing exactly how to use a specific piece of software.
That's a great point.
Perhaps the real superpower is having the critical thinking skills to decide which tool is the right one for the problem at hand.
That is a profound distinction, honestly. The software tool is just the vehicle, but your decision-making framework is the steering wheel. As we close out, I want to strongly encourage you to stay curious, remain incredibly responsible in your shared digital ecosystems, and keep focusing your energy on becoming future ready.
That's great advice.
The digital landscape will continuously shift beneath your feet, but adaptable, objective thinking will always be your anchor.
Absolutely. To solidify the frameworks we've unpacked today, I highly encourage you to review the end of module study guide and make sure you complete the workbook activities, especially that practical application exercise regarding your own workflows. Applying these concepts to your actual life is the only way the theory becomes a permanent skill.
Practice makes perfect.
Exactly. I also want to acknowledge the excellent reference materials that provided the psychological and structural foundation for this lesson. If you want to understand the deep mechanics of how our brains process information and make choices, check out Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, published back in 2011.
A classic.
Definitely. For the methodology of testing workflows, look at The Lean Startup by Eric Ries, also published in 2011. And to understand the human instincts that algorithm bias exploits, Factfulness by Hans Rosling, published in 2018, is absolutely essential reading.
Highly recommend all of those. Thank you so much for joining us. It has been a genuine pleasure unpacking the mechanics of these concepts with you.
A huge thank you from me as well. Remember, the digital world is a sprawling, fast-moving city, and it wants you to just press the accelerator, take the time to build your own map. We'll see you next time.